There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another hour of live local talk. The phone and hotline open for you at 343-0106. And on Tuesdays, we could talk to Dr. Scott Chavers, epidemiologist, head of COVID-19 response for the Mobile County Health Department. And a lot to talk about here as well. We have. Well, it seems like, Dr. Chavers, every week we've got new pieces of information as we start our conversation. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy our hour on Tuesdays. This is a good break for me, actually.
Well, good. I'm glad I can be here, and you help us with information. And I'll go right now what's people just heard in the national news feed here and been hearing. The J&J vaccine, the approval of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Okay, talk about its significance, but you know how I am. I'm a homer. What does that mean for us in Alabama? What does that mean for Mobile County?
All right. So the big thing about the J&J vaccine being approved is it's going to expand availability. And the reason why is this vaccine can be put in a beer cooler and taken pretty much anywhere. So you don't have to have the ultra-low storage, cold storage that we do with Moderna and Pfizer. This is the same technology that when I was with J&J, we used in the Ebola outbreaks in West Africa. So you literally can take this vaccine everywhere. So what that means in Mobile County, though, is a lot of the places that could not receive vaccines before because they didn't have the refrigerators or freezers to keep them can now receive this vaccine.
Okay, so, and you had talked over the months here with us that what it's not always been a discussion of the physical vaccine being available. It was infrastructure for delivery, right? And this kind of takes that out.
It does. So when we first started, you know, Pfizer vaccine availability was strictly to hospitals that had these temperatures in their freezers that were, you know, roughly 80 degrees below zero Celsius. So the only other purpose of those freezers is stem cell storage and tissue storage. I mean, that's about the only other thing you use these things for. So, and the reason you have to keep them so cold is messenger RNA breaks up much more easily than some of the other vaccine delivery stimulating type of mechanisms.
Okay, so these can be, like you said, put in the cooler. More places have them, and more doses coming in. So, I mean, is when J&J starts coming in to the state, and the numbers look really good, was 40,000 the vaccines in the first week? That's coming in. Does that mean we're not going to have Pfizer or Moderna elsewhere, or is it going to be in addition to?
This is going to be in addition to. And so I'll give you a little bit of the bad news around J&J.
Okay.
So J&J did not produce vaccines at risk, meaning they waited until they were pretty sure they had a viable candidate before they went into production, different than what Pfizer and Moderna did. So what we're going to see is this initial 40,000 allotment into Alabama, and that is going to go to these places that kind of fill in geographically the places where Pfizer and Moderna are not. So people ask us, well, when are you going to get vaccines to local urgent cares, local doctors? You know, when is that going to happen? And this is part of the positive things we're seeing now is this now is a vaccine that we can do that. The negative thing, though, is that we're going to get that initial 40,000 dose allotment. Remember, this is 40,000 doses that complete the series, though. So with Moderna or Pfizer, that if we only got 40,000 doses, that would be 20,000 people vaccinated.
Right. So we have with the what. Is there any danger, and I'm not trying to put things out there in the atmosphere, but I will, that people have been told, and because of Pfizer, you know, the two-shot regimen, will there be people, are you hearing from people who say, well, I'd rather have that one, you know, because the other one's not going to be as good? I mean, you've been almost trained that it's this two-shot procedure. Now the other one, it's only one that must not be as good.
Yeah, I hear both sides of it, actually. So there are a lot of people who don't want that second dose, don't want to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, places like our jails and prisons where you potentially have a high turnover rate, this is a perfect vaccine for those environments. Transient individuals that we do need to vaccinate, very, very good vaccine for them because you only have to see them once.
So, is the efficacy the same?
That's a hard question, actually, and I'll tell you why. The vaccines were studied in different populations and in different places across the globe. So you really can't compare the 70% efficacy of J&J to that 90% plus with the other two, because J&J's vaccine was studied more in South Africa and more in Brazil, where we have these variants now that are more difficult for the vaccines to cover. Okay. So we still get very, very good coverage, but if you look at the U.S. rates, these vaccines would be hard to say they're not that different.
Speaking of the two doses, the second, we talked about this a little bit last time, but this is anecdotal, but with family members. So I had family members that had gotten their first, and they went down and got their second, and I was dancing around with their older family members. So I danced around in my phone calls, hey, how y'all feeling? Everybody doing okay? You know, I didn't want to ask if they were having a bigger reaction. And then finally they said, what are you getting at? And I said, what are you feeling? And they said, nah, you know, the next day we took a Tylenol or something like that, you know, and rested and we felt better. Then I've heard stories, Dr. Chavers, people that said they were, the first shot wasn't much. They went and got the second shot and it felt like they had gotten run over by a Corona 18 wheeler.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I mean, so what's happening there?
Well, I think you're seeing a spectrum, right? So like when I had my two doses and I had Moderna for my vaccine, I felt nothing other than a sore arm. And then some people have these mild flu-like symptoms, especially after the second dose. For those individuals that have this kind of, you know, being hit by the COVID-19 buzz, it's either their immune systems are overly primed, or my personal theory, and no data to back this up at this point, but eventually we're going to do the study, is I think they probably were infected and didn't know it. Meaning, you guys remember we talk about 50% of those that are actually infected never know it. And I think those individuals fall under that category, which is this is actually maybe their third dose and not their second.
Okay. So, I mean, but that'll be something that has to be found out down the road that maybe they already had a certain amount of the antibodies in from having, what did you call it, wild strain corona?
Wild type infection, yes.
And then got the two vaccines. Okay. Because, I mean, that's just some of the stuff that's popping around, people are saying, so I'm trying to get, you know, some sense of exactly how this works. When we come back, I want to talk more about what this means. I mean, you say this is a net positive. This J&J vaccine is not coming in to replace other vaccines. It's an addition to, and that means, what, a better chance of us being able to find a vaccine for us or our family members sooner than later?
It's availability. It increases availability.
All right, coming right back, we'll get your questions as well. Our guest, Dr. Scott Chavers with the Mobile County Health Department. If you got specific vaccine questions or COVID questions, we're getting those answered right now. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, and we'll be right back.
First News. This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up. 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I don't know why I'd interject this. Well, maybe because I could get perspective of somebody in the health world here with Dr. Scott Chavers, but it was a side conversation I was having with somebody that when you go, like if you go to the restaurant and you order like something that's called like spicy chicken peanut surprise or something, and then they stop you when you're getting your order and they said, do you realize that this is spicy and has peanuts in it? I know it sounds cruel at first, but I don't think they should. If you order something called spicy chicken peanut surprise, and you're surprised that it's spicy and has peanuts in it, I don't know. See, Dr. Chavers, any commentary here from a medical side on that? I mean, if it's called spicy chicken peanut surprise, should you have to be told that it has spice and peanuts in it?
You know, we're in such a risk-averse society, I guess. Maybe they're worried about anaphylaxis to peanuts. I don't know.
Yeah, but I ordered the thing and it had peanut in the title.
I know. Look.
like, yes, I do realize it's spicy and has peanuts because it's in the name. So, I don't know. All right. Then we'll get back to something way less contentious and discussion of vaccine rollout surrounding COVID. So, where do we, and I've got some more narrow questions, but in a broad sense, and I know this, I understand all the things that could go into this, but with this J&J vaccine, with what we're talking about now, when is it that just folks that are, you know, younger, don't have any pre-existing condition, don't happen to work in some, class of job that gives them preferential treatment, when's everybody going to be able to get a vaccine if they want it? I mean, is that something that doesn't happen for a year? Does it happen in months? When?
You know, if things continue like they are, and we talked about 40,000 from J&J, but that's going to be a slow rollout. But Pfizer, to your question, Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines are going to continue to be available, and they're going to increase. They've gotten around a lot of the obstacles that we've talked about before in terms of, you know, just very basic stuff about putting them into the vial and not having vials to... You know, we had weather issues last week that slowed down vaccine delivery because the people that put the vaccines on the planes weren't available because they couldn't get through the snow. I mean, you have stuff like that. But, you know, manufacturing is increasing, delivery is increasing, points of distribution are now being placed in areas that before you just couldn't get them. So it's very positive, and I think if things continue the way they are, you know, hopefully by August, end of August, you know, the vaccines are here for anybody that wants them.
And that's got to lead to, I mean, because it's funny, you said August. We were talking around this morning, University of Alabama, and I think other schools in the SEC were saying, hey, we're going to have regular attendance at our stadiums this fall. I mean, that's like gosh, and do I want that to happen? But that's a tell there, right? That to do that, you got to have herd immunity to be able to do that.
You do. I mean, so there was an interesting article that came out from UAB, I guess it was last week, that was talking about, well, we could be at herd immunity by the end of April. And I looked at it, and anytime you see things like that, they're based on modeling and some assumptions that go in. But one of the interesting things that we do know is that for every one case that we identify, like 8 to 10 are not identified. So we never see them. And that's also playing into this, of the concept of herd immunity. So we have the vaccinations, which are active, and we have this historical kind of semi-vaccination from wild-type infection that's going to help until we can vaccinate everyone. To the level that we need to. So So this is one of the first positive weeks, I think, for me, in that I'm seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not a train. And, you know, there are a couple of big things that could throw all of this off, but there have been some very positive things that have happened, I think, in the last week.
By the way, for new cases and hospitalizations and all that, are you with the down? Is there not a Mardi Gras wave? If there was a Mardi Gras wave or whatever, it would be hitting now, wouldn't it, or last week?
We would see it start last week and would continue through this week, and we're not seeing that. That being said, we also are seeing a decrease in testing, which is...
But couldn't that mean less people are feeling sick, right? I mean, I didn't go get tested until I felt sick.
I think that what it may be showing... So it's funny that if you look at the post-end-of-the-year holidays or July 4th, you get this big spike in testing. And it's because people recognize that they probably were exposed or they're starting to feel like they are symptomatic or they're just feeling guilty. And so that drives a lot of testing. For me, you would want to have that continuation of testing because it's important for us to understand the epidemic.
Let's talk about the spread. And last week, I think we got into the conversation. I thought it was interesting, the nuance. And correct me where I'm wrong here, but we were talking about New Orleans last year and all that, and super spreader events. Some people spread corona more than others? Like two people could be infected, but some people spread it faster than others. Am I close to it? Is that?
You're exactly correct.
So not everybody's the same. People can spread it differently.
Absolutely. And the Tulane study actually identified some of the traits of people that are more likely to spread. So came out was that 20% of those that are currently infected are going to infect 80% of the new cases. So they are super spreader individuals. They are more efficient in transmitting COVID, the virus that causes COVID-19. Then you have super spreader events, which means that you get a couple of these people in a bar or at a Mardi Gras ball or at a concert that's inside particularly, and they can very quickly spread the virus. And that was one of the big drivers last year. In New Orleans, you had this one individual that, through genetic analyses, probably infected about 5,000 people.
Can you for like, in simple terms for me, explain, and we just got a minute or two here before the break, but how y'all genetically, how do you say, okay, here's all these people who are sick, and how do we lead it back to the Typhoid Mary of this?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, too, by the way. So we look at the virus itself, and we sequence that virus's RNA. And it gives us a very distinct picture of who that virus is, for lack of a better word, and how that virus has been transmitted. So it gets into, like, I know we got a hard break, but...
We got about a minute and a half. Yeah, we have about 90 seconds.
Where that original strain came out and how it was transmitted all over the world is done through genetic sequencing. And then these smaller studies of point spreaders and point events really uses the same technology. And you look at the viral genetic footprint in the viruses being transmitted around. And you can pretty easily determine through that and some other epi things who infected whom.
So, I mean, there's a little bit of the telephone game from when we were kids here that you can track it back to figure out.
Yeah, but a little more concrete. I mean, you know, these viruses have very distinct signatures to them that goes way beyond just a lot of stuff we think about as being unique in our bodies that helps you track these things.
All right, we come back for the break. We're going to talk more about this, and I'm So about y'all, I'm on the edge of my seat here because I'd like to know, like, what makes a super spreader, right? So we can get the description so we can do a BOLO for a super spreader. We'll do that when we come back with Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department. Joins us on Tuesdays here on the show. And a lot of questions. We're going to get to y'all's questions for Dr. Chavers, but I got to circle back, as they say at the White House press conferences, to the question that I'm fascinated. You mentioned that we talked about super spreaders last week, and that there are people that spread corona more than others. That's true, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So there now you said, and also there's a MO, there's a description of this person that spreads corona more than others. Who is this person?
Right. So this is based on a study of about 195 people. And the way that you do these studies is you look at the dynamics of viral transmission. So to be a little gross, and I apologize for this, as it's a sacrilege, but you know, viruses don't get up and walk across the room. They have to go with these droplets that come out of our mouths when we're laughing and joking and singing and doing the things we do. So this study looked at individuals and what made them more likely to spit more.
Okay.
And it comes down to body mass index, respiration, which the higher your fat levels are, the more likely you are to breathe heavy and breathe a lot. And it also came down to age. So there was, the risk factor.
So older and fatter. I'll say it, because okay. So older and fatter, yeah, are predispositions to being a super spreader for corona.
That is correct. Those are two that I feel comfortable.
But
with.
those are almost mechanical, right? It's not genetic. It's mechanical.
It is mechanical. Now there is another thing that goes along with this, and we've talked about this a little bit before because we're not all the same. But viral loads and base viral loads that you're either infected with or you carry also play into this dynamic. So if you're carrying a large viral load and then are breathing a lot, spitting a lot, you're going to be more efficient in spreading than other people.
I think this is pretty important information. I know you don't want to take away from the fact that everybody needs to do their part here. I get that, but there's no reason not to talk about, you know, things that are real and true, and that's that. So the more you're breathing, and the more you're spitting when you talk, the more you could be spreading it. And the viral load thing has fascinated me here, this discussion over time, because basically if you have it, I know I purposefully use the wrong terms here, but if I got me one corona, Dr. Chavers, versus I got me 50,000 coronas, it makes a difference, right? I mean, it's like I thought in the past, if you just got one, it would be enough to get, you know, full-blown corona or whatever, spread it. But you're saying there is a difference with the viral load and how that's transferred.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Viral load, in fact, viral load or bacterial load play a part in just about every infectious disease.
So it's a volume thing. It's not – this is really interesting on all this stuff. So it's how much – and if you get one, doesn't it replicate to produce more? Or
it's mechanical. Okay. It really is. So the more viral particles that are in your body, the more likely that viral particle is to find the cell receptor that it needs to make more little baby virus.
Okay.
And so if you got this is exponential math for lack of a better term.
Okay.
So if you got 1,000 viral particles hitting 1,000 targets and making 1,000 more little baby viruses, then that effect on the body and the effect on potential transmission is much higher than if you've got 100 viral particles hitting 100 targets and then making 1,000 copies.
Very good. This is good insight here. Also, I want to get this question from the text line. If you only got one shot of the Moderna vaccine, what is the efficacy of that?
Yeah, it looks to be between 50 and 60%. So below the single doses, even in the worst case, being Brazil and South Africa with the J&J. So if you have been vaccinated in your primary dose, your first one with Moderna or Pfizer, please complete the series. You don't get that 90% protection until that second dose.
Terry's asking, why don't we offer antibody tests for people who think they may have had COVID?
It's really a limitation of available technology right now. So, and it's also expensive. You have to keep that in mind, too. The routine rapid tests that are done are very, very cheap. Right now, they're free. But let's say they're $5 each versus doing an antibody test, which is, $70 to $100 each time. But the problem with antibody tests is they can cross-react to other coronaviruses. And so that doesn't tell us a lot. It also doesn't tell us when you were infected. So being able to interpret that test to the level that there's a warning isn't there yet. But it would be great if we could.
This text here, I'm going to just read it as written, and hopefully you can move beyond how it's written to try to answer it here. The person writes, there has already been several deaths in Mobile from this vaccination. Why don't they talk about that?
So it's a freaking lie. It's a freaking lie.
So, hey, that's words people understand.
If we had deaths truly from this vaccine, one, it would be all over the news because news reporters are incentivized to find these studies. We also would be all over this. We would shut it down because, look, there nobody wins if we're killing people with these vaccines. Nobody. Now, I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm going to tell your texter a secret. The percentage of people who ultimately die after we vaccinate them is 100%.
There you go. Headline.
We don't vaccinate corpses. So people are going to die after they get vaccinated. Now, none of them that we have seen and none of them internationally have really been linked to the vaccines.
So, and this goes into this discussion on the flip side of where somebody dies of something that's not, at least to a layman, is not directly related to corona, but it's filed as, death from coronavirus, or, it's marked as that. On the flip side here, if somebody has the vaccine, and then they die of heart disease, whatever, getting gored by a bull, I don't know, then people are going to say, well, that's somebody who died from the vaccine.
So they're coming from having done these investigations. If you have a death that is in any way temporally, meaning in time with being vaccinated, it's investigated. And it is easily found in the reports that come out of these companies and because of the way the vaccine is being delivered this time through CDC. This is something that is taken with the utmost seriousness.
People talking about testing. Texter here said J&J is being tested, their vaccine being tested on infants.
Okay. Let's talk about that one. So, no, it isn't. It's being discussed. There's two reasons why it's being discussed. One, ultimately, we are going to need a vaccine for COVID-19 that's in the pediatric schedule, just like MMR, your DTaP.
You think we will one day, we'll be there, Dr. Chavers, like when they take the kids in and they're getting their, that this will be one of the vaccines that they get when they're infants or toddlers?
I think it's going to be a lot like the hepatitis B vaccine, where, you know, it, that one was entered into the pediatric schedule because it was well tested and there was a issue with hepatitis B being, you know, it can cause severe liver damage and it's very problematic. And so I do think that will be the case. Once we get the baseline coverage that we need as adults, then the way vaccines are delivered, and hopefully we don't have to have boosters and those things for COVID-19, the best way to do it is then to put it into the pediatric one. So we need one. But let me talk about this idea of testing on kids. So the basis for this vaccine from J&J is based on a delivery system called Adeno-26. It is a viral vector that's used to deliver DNA into the cells, and that's what primes your immune system to react, to get ready to see a real infection. The reason that this can now be discussed with J&J's vaccine is there's already two vaccines that are there, available, that uses the same technology. The first one is Ebola, and we talked about the Ebola. You know, this is the same technology as Ebola, but it's also the same technology that's used in a childhood disease called RSV. It is a very, it is a very severe disease in infants.
Yeah.
And one of the vaccines for RSV is built on this technology. So the science says that this is a potential candidate for a pediatric vaccine. But we're not studying it yet, and there'll have to be a lot of discussion between now and when it actually happens about how to do it correctly.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department, getting your questions asked and answered here on Midday Mobile, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Remember, check us out Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the website, fmtalk1065.com. All kinds of ways. Of course, you can stream us online, listen to us there. The podcast, 54 hours a week of live, local, produced podcast. Mobile, Baldwin County folks talking on these shows, and you're getting those podcasts, and obviously y'all are enjoying them because it's been awesome to see the growth in that. So make sure you could subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Deezer, Spotify, any of those places, and get a subscription for free to have those podcasts delivered to you, or you can just check them out a la carte from the website on the front page of fmtalk1065.com. All right, continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department, and a lot of questions getting answered here. I've seen some of the text here. You know, they're saying that the vaccine, back to the vaccine, killing people, and then that the fact that I have you on each week to talk about that I am culpable for killing people out there by promoting, you know, information about the vaccine. So Lord knows what I would say. I'll let you take this from here.
About us killing people.
The killing people with the vaccine.
Yeah. So I always wonder about these claims. Because I can't figure out why we would do that. I mean, even a good drug dealer will tell you it's bad to kill your clientele. And we're public health. We're a not-for-profit. But even the big pharma companies and other, you know, your local doctor, you know, your pediatrician that you grew up with, there is this thing about first do no harm. And I just don't understand where this comes from. I know that it's conspiracy theories and it just kind of feeds it, but there's no benefit to anyone, for especially people that are trying to make money, like to kill your clientele.
I wonder about it. It's because it's not even the claims made on individuals, and they say, well, this physician or this person, what, maybe we can get the discussion, but I do hear that it's, you know, the old man, it's all of them. They're all on the take, and I'm like, you can't get 25 people organized, number one, nobody to spill the beans about something or all do the same thing. How you're getting every physician in the country to agree to something, y'all aren't all getting paid off, are you?
If we are, I'm not getting my check.
Okay, just want to check.
It's one of those pronoun things. It's always the days out there. You know, it's them, days, nameless, no data kind of accusations, which, I mean, I get, but, you know.
You live, let me just say this. You're from here. You live here. You see people at the grocery store. You and I have, I mean, you know, children. Wait, if you were in the business of doing something that you felt was killing people out there, I don't think you'd show your face.
Right, and certainly would not have vaccinated my mom and dad.
Yeah.
Right? Mom's 82, dad's 92. Certainly wouldn't have done that.
There you go.
Certainly wouldn't have taken it myself. You know, that's a good one, too, is, you know, one of those things that a lot of researchers have as a benchmark is would I give this to my mama?
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I understand that one. I think that should be used at the national level and at the local level. We could ask that question. Would you give this to your mama? That makes sense to me. And if it's yes, then that means a lot. Plenty of texts coming in. This text says, I had COVID in October. I'm 60 years old. I'm in good health. I took the Pfizer first shot on February 10th and had the response of that hit by a COVID bus. I'm concerned about taking the second shot now, as it's been known to be even worse. Can I wait longer than recommended to get the second shot?
So I would suggest, number one, have somebody go over how you reacted. Because that little bit right there, the how you reacted, means a lot in terms of do you get the second dose or not. So consult your primary health care provider on that one. The second part, though, is when we talk about how these vaccines are delivered, you know, we talk about 21 days for Pfizer, 28 days for Moderna, 0 days for J&J. Those are minimums. And they're there because that's how the vaccines were studied. And, you know, that's the minimum time that we want your immune system to prime before you see the second dose. There's actually no upper limit right now.
Interesting.
When you get your second dose, there is a recommended time frame.
Because you want people, because you want them to have immunity.
Right.
But there's not a loss of efficacy if you go another month or so.
Exactly. And you do not have to restart the series.
That's great info.
If you're several months out.
So Moz asks here on the text line, I'll be passing through South Africa in May. Should I try to get a specific vaccine, and will it react with my malaria meds?
So, I'm not so sure you should be taking malaria meds. I spent a lot of time in South Africa. That you would really want to be in a high risk situation. But let's say that you are. Then there really doesn't show, the data does not show any reactogenicity or cross reaction with malaria or yellow fever. And so these are some of the two big travel things to consider if you're there. So in terms of the vaccine, so no, you know, it looks like the J&J vaccine has coverage for B1351, which is the South African variant. Moderna, Pfizer do as well. Tell you the number one thing, though, is wear your mask and socially distance, because those two things absolutely prevent infection from the new variants.
Dr. Chavers, we appreciate it. I'm going to see if you can hold on for off air because I've got a pile more questions here. I'm going to try to get a few of them answered on the text line when we come back. But as always, we appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Y'all hold on.
All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way. Next, we'll talk to you tomorrow.